police.
The royalty of college football is in assembly.
Oh, my gracious. Yep. How about that?
We just stepped on the face with a hot nail thinking roster.
And welcome to the College Football Country Podcast. My name is Josh Parcell. Thank you guys for listening. Only one episode this week. We didn't have time to get to another one. Sorry, but real life sometimes takes priority. Thank you guys again, though, for downloading. Please rate and review the show on iTunes. This episode is Take the Points Week 8, 30-15 so far this season. So we're on a roll. We're going to try and keep it moving this week. We got Todd Furman on from Bet the Board Podcast. He'll join me to pick about six or seven games. And then Rossi Three Stacks comes in for an electric segment with his teasers this week. So thank you guys again. We're going to get straight into the interviews. Make sure to tell your friends about the show. Follow me on Twitter at Josh Parcell. Follow the show on Twitter at CFB Country. All right. And now welcome back our favorite guest, Todd Furman, Bet the Board Podcast. Todd, how you doing, man?
Doing well, my friend. Busy time of year to be in the sports gambling business, not only college football and the NFL in midseason form, but a little bit of NBA to whet the appetite. The NHL gets going, of course. Playoff baseball, it, in my opinion, is the single best time of year to not only be a sports fan, but obviously a sports bettor with ample opportunity to make a few pesos.
I know, and it almost seems like college football is taking a back seat to now with the NBA getting going, the baseball playoffs. But don't forget, there's some big-time college football this weekend, and I'm actually excited. The last couple weeks haven't been all that great in terms of on paper what we were looking at, but saw a bunch of upsets, so hopefully something else crazy happens this week. We'll see what happens. But, Ty, let's get right into the games. And I've got, you know, six or seven games here we're going to pick. Actually, you know what? Let me back up. Hold on. I need you to, every week, I'm going to need you to try and keep my ego in check because, Todd, I keep winning. And this is, I understand the law of averages. I understand how this thing works. Like, I know that at some point, the crash is going to come. I feel like I'm on the stock market in 2007. I'm just going higher and higher and higher, and at some point the bottom falls out. I'm 67% right now. I mean, what do I need to tell myself? How do I need to contain myself? I'm still only picking like four or five games a week. I'm trying to be super selective, but I mean,
you keep
when you're
doing
high,
Josh,
you're high.
What you've been, yeah, you keep doing what you've been doing. Don't overextend your bankroll. Always keep that in perspective and realize that even if you have a little regression, whether it's a 3-7 stretch or maybe something a touch worse, that you're still playing with house money at this point. So we tell people all the time, you know, some of the best bettors in the world, they don't get the ability, they don't have the ability to pick winners more often than other folks. They oftentimes need to try and combine perfect money management with getting the right information and being able to handle the wins as much as they can handle the losses. So the fact that you're doing such a tremendous clip early in the season, just keep that in perspective. And when you do have that inevitable losing week, don't chase. Keep doing what you've been doing. Trust the process, and the results will be there at the end of the season.
You sound like Sam Hinkie over there. Trust the process. I like that.
Yeah, I'm trying. Hopefully my results are a little bit better than Sam Hinkie, although you watch the 76ers on opening night against the Wizards. Maybe there's a little reason to be optimistic about what they finally built there, despite me thinking that Markelle Fultz will be a bust, but I digress completely.
Well, that free throw form, I don't know, man. He's got a lot of work to do. So anyway, let's not talk about basketball. People didn't come here for the NBA. Let's move into college football. Let's start with Auburn and Arkansas. So going down to the SEC, Auburn, man, that was the one game that I missed last week, and it was the one I thought I had in the bag. Quarter in, it's 20-0. Auburn's feeling good. All of a sudden, bam, they blow a 20-point lead. They lose to LSU. And they're taking on an Arkansas team that's extremely wounded. Cole Kelly making his second start at quarterback for Arkansas. What do you think in this game before I give out my pick? What do you kind of see? The line is 15.5. Auburn on the road, favored by over two touchdowns.
Yeah, life isn't going to get much easier for Cole Kelly. You saw him struggle immensely in his debut against Alabama, and last I checked, Auburn's defense probably maybe a half tick below what the Crimson Tide will bring to the table. You mentioned some of the injuries that Arkansas is dealing with, and I don't think any of that is a good spot to be in against a physical attacking defense from Auburn. Now, part of the handicap of this game, Josh, obviously entails getting inside the head of the Auburn's players, putting on your psychologist hat, figuring out if Auburn still sees opportunity to get to 10 wins in the regular season, or if they're going to feel sorry for themselves relinquishing that aforementioned 20-0 lead they had against LSU. For me, let me be clear. I want no part whatsoever of Arkansas. I'm not sure I'm running to lay it with Auburn here as this number opened 13.5 and crept towards 15.5. There's real sharp money on the road favorite, so I'd rather be laying the points with the favorite than backing the dog. If Auburn wants to be there, they can name the final score.
Yeah, and that's you hit it right on the head. That was my point exactly. We've seen now that when Auburn is locked in, they're dominant. They're probably one of the top 5 or 10 teams in all of college football. It's when they're not locked in that they struggle against Mercer or they blow a big lead against LSU. But when Auburn comes out to play, they've been as good as anybody. And I think that coming off of that loss, Gus Malzahn took a lot of heat because he made a comment. I'm not sure if it was after the game or if it was on Monday, but he said it's not the end of the world losing that LSU game. And fans were, livid about that because
You can't say that in the state of Alabama. You lose any football game, it is the end of the world. It's Chicken Little. The sky is falling, especially when Alabama keeps racking up 40-point blowouts across the state.
I understand, Todd, but if you think about Auburn, and I think you probably know this, if Auburn wins every game the rest of the season, that's asking a lot, but they still have Georgia at home, then they have Alabama at the end of the season. They would go to the playoff. If they win the SEC, win every game the rest of the year, even with two losses, they'd be in the playoff. They still control their own destiny in terms of national championship potential. Now, obviously, it'd be somewhat of a Cinderella story at this point, but they're good enough to do it, and I think that Malzahn actually gets them back on track. I think they are locked in this game, and I don't think Arkansas moves the ball. I don't think Cole Kelly can move the football against that team. Like you said, Arkansas banged up. Auburn's defense, third in the SEC in yards per carry allowed. I think that they keep Arkansas 14 points or less. Auburn wins by at least 3 touchdowns. I like them to cover that number.
I'll ask you a question real quick regarding the two head coaches in this game. More likely to be with their program going into 2018, Brett Bielema at Arkansas or Gus Malzahn at Auburn?
Gus Malzahn. It'll be Malzahn. Because, look, Auburn, if Auburn really gets rid of Malzahn, this team's not, this unless this season spirals out of control, I don't think that Malzahn is going to be in that much trouble. I mean, this is a program that's pretty darn close, I think, to being an elite program again. Jarrett Stidham has obviously been a tremendous upgrade at quarterback. He's getting better every week. They can't pull another stunt like they did last week. I think that was the one. I'm not going to call it a mulligan, but if Auburn rolls off 6 or 7 wins here at the end of the year, goes 9-3, 10-2, they're not going to fire him. The difference between him and Mark Richt, because it's similar to what happened with Richt, where you win 9 or 10 games and it gets you fired. Malzahn won a title and really won two. Won the title. I'm sorry. He got to 2 title games, won the 1 championship game. Mark Richt never even made a national championship. So I think that's the difference. I think that keeps Malzahn around. And look, this team's going to be very good next season with Stidham coming back. I think they'd be crazy to move on from him. Bielema, on the other hand, at some point you've got to show some sign of progress. And while he showed that for his first couple years at Arkansas, I mean, they've kind of hit a brick wall now. Even with the injuries at quarterback, it's not like Arkansas would have won last week against Alabama or even this week against Auburn. I think they struggle again. I could see Arkansas finally deciding to move on. There's a lot of interesting coaches out there, guys like Jeff Brohm and Norvell at Memphis. I mean, there's some interesting names who I think would make a lot of sense at Arkansas, and Bobby Petrino proved that you can win there. So if I'm Arkansas, maybe you go find somebody who's got a little bit more life on the offensive side.
It definitely makes some sense. You do have to adjust to the modern times, and the ground and pound attack may not be what Arkansas fans are looking for from Brett Bielema.
Totally agree. So let's keep it in the SEC. Let's talk about Alabama. Tennessee at Alabama. The Tide are laying 36 points.
There's only one way to go here, and it's laying the lumber with Alabama. The question, like we said, for Auburn is, if they want to be there, if Alabama is engaged from start to finish and they want to make a statement, there's no reason for me to believe that they can't maul that Tennessee defensive line that's been gashed by rushing attacks that aren't anything close to what Alabama has provided so far this season. Meanwhile, I don't know the last time Tennessee has scored a touchdown. Maybe you have to go back to the Obama administration. I can't quite figure it out, because this offense has been completely inept, and all the things you read about Tennessee, well, we're not going to fire Butch because we don't want some new coach to get saddled with a massive loss against Alabama on his resume. I think this Tennessee team showed a lack of fight last week against South Carolina. Maybe it's that they just don't have the talent, but something is clearly missing there. If Alabama wants to make a statement against their historic rival. They will. There is zero chance that I would consider backing Tennessee here plus the points. If anything, and you think Tennessee might be the side or they can be competitive, look to go under 50, because if Alabama wins 40-0, maybe 49-0, you can cash your under ticket still.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the under as well, actually. I do lean that way as well. But Tennessee hasn't shown fight in 3 weeks. I mean, ever since that loss to Florida on the Hail Mary, I mean, they come out with a lifeless game against UMass. They get shut out by Georgia at home in a game where everyone was kind of pointing to that one, being like, well, this is the game where they're going to circle the wagons and rally around Butch. That didn't happen. South Carolina, it didn't happen. They haven't scored a touchdown since the UMass game. They haven't scored a touchdown against an SEC opponent in over a month. This is not the spot to try and back Tennessee. I know that Alabama tends to let up once they get ahead by 4 or 5 touchdowns in some games. I don't think they do that against their rival. I think they're going to smoke cigars all night long in Tuscaloosa. That's an easy cover to me. I think it is a 42, 45, maybe even 49-0 win. Tennessee, if they get over 10 points, I'd be stunned. So I do lean under 2. I don't think Tennessee gets on the board. And I think that Alabama lets up once they get to about 40. So I'll lean Alabama, but I also lean under there. Let's move on. Let's back out of the Power 5 for 1 second, Todd. And we'll see what you think. I'm curious about this game. UCF on the road, laying 7 against Navy. I don't know how much research you've done on this game, but obviously the Golden Knights undefeated. If they get through this hurdle, that's a huge hurdle in between them and an undefeated season. Scott Frost is doing just outstanding work down there in Orlando. On the road, laying 7 points against a Navy team that's coming off its first loss of the season last week. What do you see in this game?
I come prepared, armed to the gills with all the statistics I need to provide accurate assessments in what I'll define as probably one of the more intriguing Group of Five matchups we're going to see this weekend. You mentioned UCF. The offensive statistics they put up this season, Josh, mind-boggling. Top 10 in the country in yards per game, number 2 in yards per point, the only team in the country to average over 50 points per game. Average scoring margin, we talked about Bama at 32.6. UCF is the only team better at 33.8. Now, the level of competition that the Knights have played isn't anything to write home about, but what they're doing is what you'd expect from a dominant football team. They're not letting inferior opposition hang around. They're making statements early, and they're rolling to comfortable victories. No greater illustration of that than what they did to Riley Ferguson and Memphis. Now, Navy, a different challenge. Navy's going to go out there. They're going to try and establish their ground game and keep that UCF offense out of rhythm all day if they can put together 7 to 8 minute drives, 12 to 15 play marches. And the one thing you're getting here with Navy is a team that's going to have a chip on their shoulder, not because of just who they're playing, but because of how poorly they performed last weekend in a loss to Memphis. So if you want to do the comparative score thing, which I know sometimes bettors do, well, UCF beat Memphis by, a gazillion points. Navy loses to Memphis. Okay, well, this says this number should be much higher. This price got out to 9. There was very real professional money that came in on Navy. The public is backing UCF like they know they already have a winner, and you can't blame them. They're 5-0 against the spread to start the season. But for me, I'll be on the sidelines here. I can't really make a compelling case to back the home underdog like I really wanted to, but I think ultimately the market will catch up to UCF. And who knows, maybe we're talking about the Knights in an undefeated showdown the final week of the regular season against USF, with those two teams not only vying for AAC supremacy, but also to try and have the inside track to being the Group of Five representative in some of the biggest bowl games.
Hard to argue what UCF has done with Scott Frost, especially like you touched on all the dominance that they've had on the offensive side. But the key number that I look at, Todd, when I'm trying to prognosticate, easy for me to say, a Navy game or a Georgia Tech game, anytime a triple option offense is involved, I look at their opponent's third down defense, because a lot of times when you face the triple option, it's about being able to get off the field on third and short, because those teams are going to pop off 3-4 yards on first down, 4 yards on second down. They're going to get in third downs, and they just keep moving the chains. Georgia Tech has done it for a decade. Navy's obviously done it for even longer. UCF is second in the American Conference on third downs, converting less than 35% of their opponent's third downs they're converting. So pretty good on third down. I think that they're able to keep Navy off the field, force them to punt a few times. I lean under in this game. I think the total is right now at around 65, 65 and a half. I think that Navy is able to take enough time off the clock that dominant UCF offense doesn't get up over 40 or anything crazy. I have UCF 35-24, so I lean slightly towards UCF and slightly under. I don't know that I'll actually put money on the game. It's just an interesting one. That's a huge, huge game in the American, and Navy still has a good chance to, you know, if they could pick up this win. The American at the top is really good. I mean, there's a few teams.
Well,
in that,
when you look at it, and I think you talk about third down defense, I think fourth downs are going to come into play. If you're Kenny Amatalolo and you know what you're dealing with here, you need to stay ahead of the sticks. You pick up 3 yards on first, 3 yards, and you have to go in with the mentality, unless you're inside your own 30, that on third and two, we know that fourth down is in our back pocket. We're going to have to go on fourth and one, fourth and two to keep the Knights on the sidelines, because if you're going to punt the football to Mackenzie Milton and company, you're going to be playing from behind, because the one thing we do know about Navy is they're not exactly stiff where it matters most against UCF on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, and actually I think we'll talk to Rossi Three Stacks about this at the end of the podcast, but I would probably like to tease UCF. I do think UCF wins the game, and like I said, I lean to them slightly over the touchdown, but if I can tease them down to an even money game, even on the road, I would take them. A few more games. Let's talk Big 12, some more high-powered, well, at least one more high-powered offense. West Virginia, this is the line that's the weirdest one of the weekend. 9.5 is the number. West Virginia laying 9.5 at winless Baylor. Why is this line under double digits?
Well, you look at what West Virginia did last week and how different this number would be had they not been able to score the final 29 points in their win against Texas Tech. We know one thing about West Virginia. They can throw the football with the best of them. Will Greer tied alongside JT Barrett, leading the country in touchdown passes with 21. But on the flip side, they can't stop anybody. And I'm still trying to figure out how Tech completely went into a shell last weekend in Morgantown. You look at West Virginia, and I think anytime you're talking about laying points on the road, even against a winless Baylor side, you need to get stops. You're going to have to try and find ways to build a two-score lead. And Baylor had their brains beaten in last weekend by Oklahoma State, so they're not going to be any stranger to a high-powered offense that's going to show a good amount of balance. You look at what West Virginia has coming up schedule-wise, and I think that's part of the thing that works against the Mountaineers as well. Well, I mean, you want to talk about flat spots. Look at what West Virginia, you know, what they had to do last weekend against Texas Tech, knowing, oh, by the way, a home day with Oklahoma State looming, and then games against Iowa State, Kansas State, etc., to close things out. I would not be surprised if Matt Rhule, who has been a ground-and-pound coach in his past at Temple, probably doesn't have the personnel to employ that yet at Baylor, commits to the ground game. We see the Bears run the ball 40 to 50 times and keep West Virginia's offense on the sidelines. I like the Bears quite a bit. I think they're going to pull off an outright upset somewhere down the back half of their schedule, and no greater spot to maybe do it than against a West Virginia team that provides very little defensive resistance.
See, this is the moment in the podcast where you start scaring me to death, because, look, I know this line is tricky. I know that whenever I see a line that's this out of whack, or it seems like it. I mean, Baylor's been awful. They're losing games by an average of almost 19 points in their last four. Vegas clearly knows something that I don't know. You know something that I don't know. If you think the Bears pull off an upset at some point, maybe it is this week. You make a compelling argument, but goodness gracious, Oklahoma State put up 750 yards against Baylor. I mean, I know Baylor might move the football. They ain't slowing down West Virginia at all. And I mean, West Virginia's going to have to come out flat. Now, they have shown. They had that comeback win against Texas Tech. Don't forget, too, that after jumping out to a big lead against Kansas, they let Kansas right back in that game and ended up actually pulling away for a miracle cover late. But I don't know. I mean, this line is just so low. You may have convinced me to just stay on the sidelines, but you really think Baylor could pull off the outright upset even as early as this week?
I think the Bears could pull. They're going to pull one of these games out of their hats. Now, I'm not sure it happens this week. But if there's a team capable of laying an egg on the road in a sandwich spot, why should it not be West Virginia? I don't exactly get the feeling that the Mountaineers are the most buttoned-up team in all of college football. And with some bigger fish to fry on the horizon, would not surprise me in the least if we're looking at the scoreboard and all of a sudden we see West Virginia on upset alert with the Bears out to a quick 14-0 lead.
Sure. That could make sense. Well, I'll text you on Saturday after that happens, and then I'll go ahead and burn that ticket when it happens. So, all right, well, I'll probably lay West Virginia and just cry myself to sleep at night after they lose outright on Saturday. Let's move on. Big 12, another game. Oklahoma State at Texas, Todd. Oklahoma State laying 7 on the road against Texas. The Longhorns, super interesting. They've been great against the spread, 4-0-1 since losing to Maryland in the season opener. Sam Ellinger looks like he's the guy at quarterback. He had another pretty great performance against Oklahoma, albeit in the loss last week. Loved Texas in that spot. They ended up covering. I thought they were going to win the game. They came close. The Cowboys have kind of been out of sight, out of mind here for a few weeks since that TCU loss, but the offense is still as good as it's ever been. What do you see in this game with the Cowboys laying a touchdown in Austin?
I think this is one of the tougher games to try and handicap. You have to figure out what Texas is going to be, a weaker move from a comeback that came up short against Oklahoma in the Red River rivalry. We know the weakness of this Texas defense is their secondary, and they're going to have to at least limit, because you can't eliminate completely, those big explosive plays that Oklahoma State is going to be able to find in the passing game. Early kickoff in Austin, I don't think there'll be much of a home field advantage working in the Longhorns' favor. We've already seen Oklahoma State lay an egg earlier this season. Now, I know that was in their own building against TCU, but this is a team north of 600 yards per game, top offense in the country in that particular category. And you look at Texas, I just don't know if they're going to be able to match them score for score. I like what Texas can supply as far as resistance on the ground, but that secondary still is a work in progress. And while I like what I've seen from Sam Ellinger, I think he's the quarterback of the future. To ask him to answer Mason Rudolph, I think, is a bit of a precarious position. Would be more inclined to lay the points here with Oklahoma State, but Josh, I made this number 6.5, so I don't see a whole heck of a lot of value going one way or another.
I'm going to lay the points. I'm going to lay the points with Oklahoma State for the exact reason you said. It's the big plays. It's the home run plays. Texas doesn't have that in their arsenal, even against Oklahoma. They don't hit too many big ones. They're more of the, you know, take 15, 20-yard chunks if they can. Ellinger's a good player, but he's only completing 54% of his passes right now. It's not like he's lighting the world exactly on fire. And against Oklahoma State, I know Oklahoma State doesn't have the best defense in the world, but boy, that Texas secondary is very weak. And you saw guys like Mark Andrews getting loose last week for big plays against Texas down there in Dallas. I think that Oklahoma State lights it up on them. I think they put up 40+. And Texas, while I think that the Longhorns, it pains me to go against them because I've kind of been in Tom Herman's corner all season long. Look, like we said, they've covered four of their last five. The only other one they didn't cover was a push. They covered against USC. They covered against Oklahoma. They've played some of the best teams in the country pretty tight. I think at some point a team like that, they're going to wear a little thin. I think that, like you said, early kickoff, they've played a bunch of emotional games in a row. Ellinger's a little beat up. Buchel, even if he comes in, still not 100%. I think Oklahoma State lays it on Texas in this spot. Just a tough spot for me to back Texas. I think Oklahoma State wins 41-24. Another interesting number, the under in this series, 5-0-1 in its last six. So maybe you see something like a little bit of an under trend heading in this direction.
Well, if it worked, I mean, the under is definitely more suited to Texas and the way they want to play to try and sustain drives and keep Oklahoma State's offense on the sidelines as best they can.
Sure. So let's move on. We got a couple more games here. Actually, I got two more games on the slate. The two biggest ones of the weekend. Michigan at Penn State. College game day going to be in Happy Valley. The Wolverines, not the best couple of weeks for them with John O'Korn at quarterback. Look, I'm not jumping off the Michigan bandwagon just yet. I think the Wolverines are going to cover this game. I'll explain why in a second. But Penn State's covered 13 of its last 15. That's a pretty impressive number. Coming to be at home, the whiteout game, prime time against the Wolverines. What does Vegas see? This line around 9.5 right now.
This number is extremely tight. When you look at this particular point spread, it opened a little bit higher at 12.5. So if you had a chance to grab 13, maybe on the bye with Michigan, it would make sense to back the Wolverines there. And a game that forecast to be a little bit lower scoring is a total of 44.5 would indicate. Michigan's struggles offensively, specifically in the red zone, have been well chronicled. I mean, this team is 113th in the country, averaging 2.2 offensive touchdowns per game. That's not going to get it done against a team like Penn State that's had 2 weeks to prepare to come up with some unique wrinkles in their game plan. And oh, by the way, a game Penn State lost 49-10 in Ann Arbor a season ago. I don't love this Penn State offense nearly as much as what they were at the end of last season. If Michigan can at least neutralize Saquon Barkley, it puts a lot of pressure on Trace McSorley, and a passing game that I'm not sure is capable of living up to those advanced expectations when you know it's coming. Michigan on the other side, where are they offensively? I don't think Penn State is as good defensively as some of the metrics suggest. I think Michigan's defense is as good as advertised, and when you look at this total hovering right around 45, it may be a sucker's bet. I could be laughing when it's 21-17 at the half. But until proven otherwise, I think defense becomes the order of the day. Michigan gets Higdon on track, tries to keep Penn State at bay as best they can, and really feels the first team to 24 gets the win here. We lean Penn State at 9.5, but again, not with any real strong conviction to try and back one of these two particular sides.
Call me crazy, but I'm just not sold on Penn State yet. I mean, this is a team that I've said this going back to the beginning of this season. They are a blocked field goal away from being 8-4 or 9-3 last season and playing in the Citrus Bowl. And all of a sudden, they make the Rose Bowl. They play well in that game. Saquon Barkley Barkley has the game of his life. They come up just short, 52-49 in that Rose Bowl. Then they come out this season. They've looked extremely good against a gauntlet of Akron, Georgia State, Indiana, Northwestern. I mean, they just haven't played anyone. And I know Michigan is coming in struggling. And you can look, if you want to do the comparative score thing again, Penn State beat Indiana by 30. Michigan needed overtime to win on the road in Bloomington. But I'm back in Michigan one more time. I'm giving them one more chance. And that Michigan State game, I throw a little bit of that out. I take that game with a grain of salt. It was played in a downpour. They turned the ball over five times. That's not going to happen most weeks. I know the offense isn't what it should be. John O'Korn completing less than 50% of his balls the last 2 weeks. I like what Higdon brings to this team. Caron Higdon at running back. He's run for 260 yards, three touchdowns in his last two games. I think the formula in this game sets up well for Michigan to keep it close. And yeah, Penn State's had 2 weeks to prepare, but I don't care what any sort of national media wants to tell you because they're sick of hearing about Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh is a damn good football coach, and he's one of the five or six best coaches in the entire country, maybe one of the top three. He has been an outstanding coach. He is a yard away, just like Penn State's a blocked extra or a blocked field goal away from going 9-4. Michigan is a yard away from maybe being in the playoff a year ago. So it's crazy how things can change on the blink of an eye. And Michigan, the narrative now is that Penn State is a college football playoff preeminent contender, and Michigan is just hanging on by a thread in a rebuilding year. I think the Wolverines come in and play an inspired game. They hand the ball off a lot. They put three tight ends, 8-9 guys in the box on defense. They slow down Saquon Barkley. They make this game old school Big Ten football. I think Penn State wins, but real, real tight. I think it's 20-16. I like the under. We'll see if it's 21-17 at halftime, like you said. Probably will be again. You're smarter than me. But Penn State, 20-16. I like the Wolverines to cover the number. If you got it out at 12 or 12 and a half or whatever it was to open, I'd feel real good about my chances right now.
Yeah, definitely some opportunity in the market that's trending, oddly enough, towards Michigan and towards the over. So a little bit of reverse correlation, at least as far as recreational observers might think.
Yeah,
in this
and
game.
The one other note that I found interesting here is it is a whiteout game for Penn State, and that, you know, people like to put some sort of stock in that, the home field advantage for Penn State in that primetime spot. Penn State's 4-5 in whiteout games, so it's not like that's really giving them any sort of extra advantage up there in Happy Valley. An interesting note to keep in mind as you think about where you're going to put your money in that game. Final game of the week, Todd, USC at Notre Dame. Fighting Irish laying 3.5. I love Notre Dame. I've loved them for weeks. Now here's their chance to put up or shut up. They get a big time game at home, taking on a Trojans team that's good, but they're squeaking by just about every week. They obviously lost the game to Wazoo, but a lot of games here other than Stanford have been close. What do you see in this game? Can Notre Dame cover the 3.5 points at home?
Well, I think when you look at this particular game, the real question is what USC will have left in the tank. I mean, this is a team that already appears to be running on fumes. I know it's been well chronicled. They have no bye weeks this season, and they would probably be well served to get a little bit of a respite given the schedule they've gone through. Pretty fortunate to hang on last weekend against Utah. Again, they won 28-27, dodging a late two-point conversion despite being nearly two touchdown favorites. Now, Sam Darnold, his performances have leveled out a bit. Six touchdowns, only one interception over the last 2 weeks. But you look at this series historically, and the one area where USC has always been better is with skill position talent on the edge. The unfortunate part for SC, where are the game breakers? Deontay Burnett, sure. Ronald Jones. But aside from that, there isn't that speed on the outside to be able to take advantage of a Notre Dame defensive backfield that I think can be exploited a bit. You mentioned Notre Dame, and if you want to buy stock in the Irish, this is the week to do so, because we're going to learn a lot about them with a game against SC, a game against NC State, a road trip to Miami, and a game against Stanford to close things out. There's no reason if Notre Dame were, and of course this is a big if, to run the table, that they wouldn't be in the college football playoff. Problem is, I don't know if Brandon Winbush can do enough with his arm. I like what they bring to the table on the ground, and wouldn't be surprised if this is a game where USC starts quickly, has a lead at the half, but ultimately Notre Dame is able to wear them down with the number very much hanging in the balance late in the game. So no real strong conviction there. I would lean towards SC, though, in the first half. I think they go into the break up, you know, a score or maybe a little bit more.
Okay, USC first half. I could get behind that. I do think Notre Dame wins this game. Key thing to keep in mind in this game is going to be the turnovers. Last week was the first time all season Darnold has not thrown a pick in a game, but Notre Dame is 9th in the country in turnover margin. USC 122nd in giveaways. Now, they've taken the ball away a lot, so they're 59th in margin, a little bit better there. But I think that if Notre Dame can take care of the ball, force a couple turnovers, I think the skill position players at Notre Dame are every bit as good as USC. Josh Adams is, I know Ronald Jones is great, but Josh Adams has been fantastic at running back. Equanimeous St. Brown is one of the most physically gifted receivers in the country. They don't throw the ball all that well. Wimbush doesn't have a great arm, but he's had 2 weeks now to try and rest up on that lower body, try and rest up that ankle to feel healthy. I think Notre Dame, like we talked about, with USC's injuries and the attrition that they've dealt with and just playing game after game, week after week, no buys, Notre Dame getting 2 weeks to prepare for this game at home, I do think Notre Dame wears them down. I think Notre Dame wins this game by about a touchdown. I think they covered the 3.5-point number. I think on paper, the talent is fairly even across the board if you look at both sides of the ball. But being at home and with 2 weeks to prepare, I'm going to back Notre Dame. I think the Irish get it done.
Can't really argue that. I mean, I think this is a good, you know, watershed moment for where SC plans to go this particular season. You look at the list of victories they have. Where do they build their resume? Is it the close loss to Georgia, or is it on the win against Michigan State? I still don't think the Spartans are much to write home about. So we're going to learn a lot more about the Fighting Irish, not only this week, but the subsequent schedule that they have over the next few weeks as well.
Okay, so real quick, I wanted to ask you about that, actually, because here, I'll try to make this as concise as possible, but I find this super interesting about Notre Dame. We judge these teams a lot based on preseason expectations, what happened a year ago. Notre Dame was 4-8, came into the season unranked. They lose to Georgia early in the season by one. At the time, we said, all right, that's not a great loss for Notre Dame. Georgia's pretty good. We don't really know how great Georgia is. Turns out, they're very good. Then 2 weeks later, they go into East Lansing, beat a Michigan State team. Obviously, you have your, you know, maybe concerns about Michigan State, but Michigan State all of a sudden is in the top 20. And that win over Michigan State on the road by 20 looks pretty darn good. Yet, we haven't really bumped Notre Dame out. We haven't retroactively gone back and given Notre Dame, I think, any more credit for hanging on in a close game against a top three team and then beating a top 20 team on the road by 20. Notre Dame's still hanging outside the top 14 or 15 teams in the country in the polls. How does Vegas kind of view this Notre Dame team in a vacuum as far as the power ratings are concerned? Where do they kind of fall?
I think Notre Dame is a little bit undervalued, not so much in the odds market, but in the eyes of the casual football fan, which is a bit surprising because normally Notre Dame is the poster child for blue blood program that's overvalued but in the way the national media looks at them. Notre Dame's going to have a chance over the next couple weeks. I mean, if they can hold serve at home and beat USC and NC State, they're going to be impossible to ignore, and we're going to get a much better indication that this program is headed in the right direction compared to the 4-18 that we saw on the football field a season ago that had Brian Kelly entering the season and squarely on the hot seat. But if we're talking about Notre Dame losing back-to-back games potentially like they could against SC and NC State, all of a sudden that record doesn't look nearly as gaudy, and it's a question of where in Florida to a second or third tier bowl game where Notre Dame fans will be spending their upcoming Christmas holiday.
Brian Kelly can get his nice red sunburn going a little bit earlier this year if they lose.
Everybody loves El Paso right around Christmas. Everybody loves the Russell Athletic Bowl in Orlando.
Oh geez. Well, Notre Dame's opponents are 31-7, their remaining opponents, 31-7 right now. So it doesn't get any easier for the Irish. I do think they're a great team, but it would be hard for most teams to be able to navigate that schedule. We'll see what happens this weekend, though. I do think they get by USC. Todd, that's going to do it, man. Thank you once again for joining me. Your insight is always appreciated. And go check out the Bet the Board podcast. Listen to what you and Bannon Insider are doing every week. One of the best podcasts. I listen to it every single week. So thanks a lot, Todd.
Thanks, man. Always appreciate it. And keep up that winning streak. Remember, 67% will get you to build mansions. You finish with a profit margin above 55%, assuming flat bets. There's nothing to be disappointed about. So we should aim for 60 that you have a nice little cushion to build off of.
There we go. We're getting better every week. All right. Thanks a lot, Todd.
Always a pleasure.
And now the moment everyone's been waiting for, our favorite part of the podcast every week, the return of Rossi Three Stacks. Rossi, what's going on, my man?
I'm back, Josh. I wouldn't say I'm in one piece, but I'm back.
So we call you Rossi Three Stacks, but I think for this week, we might have to call you Rossi Two Stacks.
It's like two and a half.
We'll call it two and a half stacks. The bankroll took a bit of a hit last week.
It did. Well, so here's the thing on that. Obviously, we missed the Washington State-Cal game badly.
That one didn't go well.
That game was almost 50 points different than the line said it would be. That made me think about it afterwards. That should be like shooting the moon. If you miss a bet by 50 points or more, they should cancel the bet.
You win.
Yeah, you win, or they just cancel it. It's like, you know what? You were way off here, buddy. We're just going to cancel this one. I'm going to propose that to whatever the Las Vegas gambling commission is.
Well, not only was it like 50 points off because the line was 15.5?
14.5.
14.5, and then the final was 34. So, 38 and a half was the difference, right?
Yeah, that checks out.
No, 48 and a half.
So for 34, carry the one. Yeah, 48 and a half. All right, so 48 and a half. So not only was it 48 and a half off from the line, I picked Washington State to win by 35. So I was about 70 points off.
Whoa.
Classic mix-up. That's okay.
You shot the moon.
Yeah. So in reality, everybody wins. So that actually, but that was the loss. And then Saturday, we went 4-1. And the only loss there was the Auburn game where they blew the 20-point lead.
Did I pick that game? I don't think I picked that game.
No, I did. No, I'm only thinking about myself right now. I'm sorry.
Well, I understand that. Yeah, no, the rest of our teaser hit. Most of them comfortably, the beauty in that, with that being a Friday night game, I was like, you know what? I just missed a bet by like 40 plus points. I didn't even get back in the action on Saturday. So actually I could have just bet the rest of the teasers as a slightly smaller teaser and won, but I just sat it out. Didn't lose any more money. That's why we're saying 2.5 stacks.
Okay, yeah. So now it's time for week 8 picks with
yes,
Rossi,
sir.
2.5 stacks. let's try and get that back up to 3 this week.
Yes, sir.
First game, what you got?
All right, West Virginia, -9. We're going to tease them down to -2 at Baylor.
Oh, boy.
What am I missing here?
Had a long conversation with Todd Furman about this game.
Okay, so what am I missing?
Well, your boy Mr. Furman is picking the Bears to win. So,
what?
Yeah.
So, well, maybe I should just go listen to that podcast first, but I don't really get it.
It.
So Baylor's winless. West Virginia's good. I mean, I guess Baylor's kept everyone close at home. All one possession games, I guess, against UTSA and Liberty. And Oklahoma. Oklahoma yeah. being
Oklahoma
obviously
was
the
home.
That was at home. So they have played close games at home. But Baylor is winless, and West Virginia is good. I mean, I don't know. I love getting West Virginia by less than a field goal. Disagree with Todd here. Rossi 2.5 stacks versus Todd.
The former odds maker.
Yeah, whatever.
No, I'm going with you. I'm on your side here. No, Ross, we're sticking together in this one.
Yeah.
Screw Todd. What does he know?
I agree.
Yeah, thanks.
I don't know. Like I said, I don't know what I'm missing here, but I'll go back and listen to – tell you what, person listening to this right now, if Todd makes a compelling point, feel free to throw this out the window. I don't really know what he said, but until then, Will Grier always covers, and we're going with that.
There we go. That's my man. All right. Will Grier always covers. So we'll take him getting less than a field goal there – or giving less than a field goal, I guess. So,
yep.
All right, cool. What's
exactly.
next?
All right, Michigan State, -7. We're going to tease them to even at home against Indiana. This is one I don't think we need to spend too much time on because it is the Rossi 2.5 stacks logic of, do you think Michigan State will beat Indiana at home? My vote is yes. Michigan State is pretty good. And Indiana, as you pointed out last week, everybody's only really seen them. Well, now they've seen them twice. They saw them once keep up with Ohio State for a half.
Mm-hmm.
And then they saw them last week almost beat Michigan mm-hmm. at home. If anything, I feel like this is a letdown game after a crushing loss to Michigan, a game they very well could have won. Mm-hmm. Michigan State is better than Michigan. Now it's at Michigan State. I love Michigan State to win. I think they cover -7, but I'm definitely taking them at an even line.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. Indiana is a classic team. They play their better games close, their better opponents close, and then by the end of the season, they're 4-8. So, yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. this game, this isn't a marquee game for them. I mean, Michigan State's in the top 20 now, but like you said, coming off the Michigan game. All right, I'll buy it. I'll buy Michigan State
okay.
to win at home. Cool. Let's keep rolling.
All right. Michigan, +9.5. We're going to tease them to +16.5
Love
at
it.
Penn State.
Love it.
Now, I am not remotely confident in Michigan's offense. In fact, I call him John O. Candy Corn because he's not that good and he's only going to be around for like 2 more weeks. Pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
Thanks.
That's...
I wrote that one down.
Good.
So, but really, I do think Penn State wins probably by a touchdown, but I think it's going to be a low-scoring, grind-it-out game. This 9.5 line is just my favorite one to tease. You could tease both sides, but you could talk me into Penn State -2.5 here. I think the line is just pretty good. So I definitely like Michigan getting almost 17 points.
I'm thinking, Ross. I'm thinking about
it. I think we do both sides. Get Penn State minus, you get Penn State by 3, 7, 10, 13, 14. Hell, you could even get them by 16. You'd still win.
You could even get them by 15. I mean, sure, 15. Why stop there?
I don't see any reason not to. 15 to nothing.
That could be it. I picked Penn State 20-16. 4-point game. I like teasing both sides of that, Ross. You might have turned me on to something here.
Me too. Well, there's your two team special of the 2.5 point teaser of the week.
Your two way.
Yes. Ross, yeah. Okay.
Rossy two way.
No, I didn't want to say it. There's some connotations there I'm not willing to wade into.
Nope, we got it. Nope, new nickname, Rossi Two-Way on the podcast every week. Good one. All right, let's keep moving on. What you got right. Next?
Iowa State, +7. We're going to tease them to +14 at Texas Tech.
Okay.
So we said Iowa State by a million last week. We were
pretty close.
We were off by...
55.
Was it 45 nothing?
45 nothing, yeah.
Okay, so 45 nothing.
Yeah. Give or take.
Obviously, they were playing Kansas, so that's, you know, what they should have done, what a good team should have done.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I'm going to keep riding that Iowa State train right now. I just love the juju going around that program right now, as I mentioned last week. And Texas Tech is solid, but I actually do think Iowa State's a pretty good team at this point. So I'll take them +14 at Texas Tech all day. I would like it a lot more if I could get above that 14-point line, even by half a point. But for no other logic, again, other than I like the juju around this Iowa State team, I'm riding it.
That's fine. I mean, I'm probably going to stay away, but I think Iowa State's a good team. They obviously have a couple wins behind their back, but Texas Tech can put up a lot of points, Rossi. I do not like laying points against that offense.
This does not fit the normal mold of games I like to tease, which is, if you haven't noticed at this point in the season, is lower scoring teams.
Mm-hmm.
I really like to tease games where, like, with bad offenses involved, because I just feel like there's less of a variance.
Yeah.
So you're spot on. If I'm gonna nix one from here, that would be the first one to go, because of the, you're exactly right. Texas Tech could put up points in a hurry, and some wonky stuff could happen.
Ooh. Okay. So let the record show that if this 16 teaser doesn't hit because of Iowa State, it was the one game we were going to cut. So again, we basically win.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
no,
okay,
totally.
Cool.
And if it misses by more than 50, we also win.
Right.
All right. Next up, game that we're not going to miss by 50, Missouri -14. We're going to tease them to -7 at home against Idaho. So look, Missouri's not good.
With the Missouri Tigers.
Yes.
Oh,
but
boy.
They have played almost exclusively decent to very good teams.
Okay.
And now they've gotten beaten badly by them.
Murdered by them. Okay.
But this is a very different ball game.
Okay.
Idaho is 2-4.
Yep.
One win against a team I had literally never heard of, like California somebody.
Sacramento State.
Sacramento State.
I looked it up.
Okay, fair enough. The other win was against South Alabama.
Mm-hmm. Who beat Troy?
Technically, they beat Team USA.
Oh.
So keep that in mind.
Wow.
I know that. No, in seriousness, I'm going to our weighted bat theory from a few weeks ago. Right, they've spent a few weeks playing against SEC defenses, specifically Georgia's last week, who they showed some life against.
Yeah,
And now they go play Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
I think Missouri has shown more life the last couple weeks, so I really like them to cover a 7-point spread at home against a 2-4. Low major team.
Man, you know, this is crazy. So as bad as Missouri is, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on Missouri, but they could go to a bowl game. They're 1-5, but if they beat Idaho and UConn in their next 2 weeks, which God help them if they don't, they'll be 3-5. And their final four games is Florida at home. I mean, Florida's nothing spectacular. Then Tennessee.
Right.
Who knows what Tennessee is going to be by that point.
Yep.
At Vandy, at Arkansas. They could conceivably win 3 of those 4. They could go 6-6. Hell, they could. I mean, I don't think they're going 7-5. They're not winning all those games. But
no, definitely not.
But if they can get these two, you know, cupcakes under their belt, Missouri, I mean, it's not crazy to think they go 6-6. So I think with that in mind, I think Missouri comes out. I'm with you here. I think Missouri comes out and knows, hey, let's turn our season around right here. We still have a chance to end with a 500 record or a winning record, make a bowl game, save the season. Yeah. All right, cool. So what, we're teasing that down to what?
-7.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Let's do it. Hell yeah, I'm in. Lock it in.
Hell yes, Dan. Welcome to the teaser.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, if you liked that one, you're going to love this one.
Yes.
Western Kentucky, -10. Yes. We're going to tease them down to -3 at Old Dominion.
Yes.
ODU really sucked. So since beating UMass, who we'll get to in a minute, they've lost by 30 to UNC, a bad UNC team, 38 to Virginia Tech, 30 at home to Florida Atlantic, mm-hmm. and then 32 against an average Marshall team.
Mm-hmm.
Western Kentucky is not the Western Kentucky they were a year ago or 2 years ago, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But they've been competitive, and everybody is beating the hell out of Old Dominion right now.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can get Western Kentucky by 3, I'm real pleased with that.
Isn't Old Dominion's quarterback 17 years old or something like that?
I'm not allowed to comment on that.
All right, well, I'll say it for you. I'm pretty sure he's 17. So, yeah, that's probably part of the reason why that Old Dominion is terrible. So I'll go with you. So we're teasing that one to Western Kentucky.
-3.
-3. Oh, boy. Yeah, no way Old Dominion. Yeah. All right, I'm with you.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's lock that one in, too. Boy, we haven't even played the games this week, and you're on fire. We might as well put the money in our pockets now.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm actually just going to go ahead and spend it.
Yeah, that's what I like to do.
Oh, also, so that game, I think, is Friday night. Keep that in mind. If you want to include that one, get your teasers in early.
Okay, good. All right, so I think I know what's coming next.
You do.
Okay.
It's finally here.
Yeah, boy.
The pillow fight of the millennium.
Come on.
Georgia Southern traveling north to UMass.
Yes.
We have 0-5 Georgia Southern against 0-6 UMass. So the Minutemen are actually favored by 7 here, but I don't really care about that.
Okay.
As promised, we are taking the under.
Yes.
It is currently at 55.5. We're going to tease that up to 62.5 and just pound that under.
62.5. No shot.
I agree.
Love that.
No, I totally agree.
I will be locked. What time is that game?
I have no idea. If it's later than 12 o'clock, let's see. So full disclosure, I'm not going to be watching any college football on Saturday.
You have a wedding?
The PGA Champions Tour is making its yearly stop in Richmond. So I'll be watching John Daly and Jesper Parnevik. I'm so excited.
Oh, you can't turn that down. So I wouldn't blame you one bit.
No. Yeah. Let's see. What time is this football match? It is 3:30. Whoa.
Prime time. Is it the CBS game?
Yeah, prime time on CBS.
UMass hosting Georgia Southern up there. Now, is this the one at Gillette Stadium? I mean, geez, UMass, they're going to pack the house for this game.
It's a Warren McGuirk Alumni Stadium in Amherst, Massachusetts.
Okay.
Whoa. There are only 40 tickets available, starting at 27.
We should go.
Well, as I mentioned, I'm going to be watching.
Screw that.
Jesper Parnevik and John Daly and Miguel Angel Jimenez. No way.
All right, fine. Quick note about Georgia Southern. So they almost cost us last week. They almost blew it. Mm-hmm. They were up 27-21 going into the fourth quarter and gave up 2 late touchdowns to New Mexico State, who is pretty bad themselves.
Yep.
And those 2 touchdowns came in, well, one was at the start of the fourth quarter and then gave up a late score with 2 minutes to go but to lose that game. But they were winning. They were winning in the fourth
mm-hmm.
quarter. I thought our pillow fight was going to be ruined, but it wasn't. So we're going to tease the under 62.5. Probably going to come in. What happens? So what's the rule if you win a bet by 50?
Oh.
I mean.
Oh, geez.
See, that's – now we're getting into some gray area here.
I think – I don't know. I think you multiply it by 5.
I think right? So. Yeah, yeah. That's called the Rossi two-way principle is
yes.
Win by 50 – multiply your winnings by 5. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
I'm on board. I like it.
Yeah.
I'm locking
awesome.
It in.
Yeah. I am going to be shamelessly checking, assuming I'm still at the golf tournament. I'm going to be shamelessly checking the score on this one.
There we go. U Massacre 2K17.
The U Massacre. Yeah, man. So let's see. I guess that's it. I am staying away from the UNC Virginia Tech game, though I think we all know how that's going to go. If you're going to bet anything here, I probably would take the under there also.
Mm-hmm.
It's which right now is it like 51.5?
Mm-hmm.
So teasing that up to 58.5 would not be bad. Yeah. There's no way
Carolina's not going to score.
Carolina's not. They might not score at all.
Yeah.
At most, if they return a kickoff for a touchdown or something, they might score 14.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
And so at that point, do you think Tech puts up 44? Maybe. Again, I'm probably staying away from it altogether, but I think this is like, this has like 35-3 Virginia Tech written all over it.
There you go. You heard it here first, folks. 35-3 Virginia Tech. Hokies win. All right. Well, all right, cool. So real quick, run down your picks real quickly and we'll get you out of here.
Yep. West Virginia, -9 to -2 at Baylor.
Okay.
Michigan State, -7 to -even against Indiana. Michigan, +9.5 to +16.5 at Penn State. Iowa State, +7 to +14 at Texas Tech. Missouri, -14 to -7 at home against Idaho. Western Kentucky, -10 to -3 at Old Dominion. Georgia Southern and UMass, -55.5 to -62.5. And then if you really want to, under in the UNC Virginia Tech game. But we'll keep that one off the record,
even though it's probably
the one I'm most confident in. I'm not going to bet it.
Good. That's what we like. We want you to keep the ones that you really like off the podcast. We don't want people to actually make money. You know, I like that. Keep it all for yourself. So, all right, go Hilltoppers, go Eagles, Cyclones, Mountaineers, all that good stuff. Rossi two stacks, Rossi two way. We'll workshop it. We'll see which one comes back to make his picks next week, depending on how Saturday goes.
You got it, man.
All right, cool. Well, we'll see you later.
All right. See ya.
All right, there it is. Rossi three stacks, Todd Furman in the books. Thank you guys again for listening. I'll be back next week. Hopefully have a couple more podcasts for you guys. Only was able to get through one this week, but had to get the take the points in. We got to give the people what they want. We got to give them the money. 30-15 again this week. I'll have my official picks out on the website, cfbcountry.com, tomorrow or today. You're listening to this on Friday. They'll be up on Friday afternoon, all my picks for week 8 in college football. We're going to have a good week. We're going to keep this thing rolling. Thank you guys again for listening. Go give a rating on iTunes, 5 stars. Leave a quick review if you like the show. If you don't like the show, stay the hell away. Just stop listening. I don't really care. But I really appreciate the ones of you who do listen. Tell your friends about the show. Thank you guys again. Love you. Goodbye.